is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
A good week for the stock market, at least for some of the major indexes. The Dow up 0.5%, the S&P up, but the NASDAQ was down this week. But more troubling were some major PMI indicators that came out this week. The Philly Fed was down, the Chicago activity, and the NAHB, pointing to the economy is definitely in a slowing trend. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava. Welcome to this week's program. Coming up in Hour 1, Dave Nikoski from Vermilion Research will join us in Hour 1. He's our technician this week. Dave is pretty positive on this market. It's got a lot of breath. He likes what he sees with all the major asset categories, from commodities to stocks to emerging markets doing very well. He's got a positive bent on the market, so you want to hear that. Ned Schmidt will be here to talk about gold. He loves the price of gold, and he says look for a pullback, which could be a nice buying opportunity. And of course, Ryan Poplava will be here to talk about what moved the markets this week. All of that coming up in Hour One.
And I'm John Loeffler. Remember at the beginning of the year how bad everything looked? We went into crisis almost immediately after we got past the first of the year and continued on a very bumpy path. But now, optimism seems to be up. There are stock market gains. The Dow has gains. Gold, oil. NASDAQ still in negative territory. Brent crude still up. Silver up. So interesting. What does this mean? A new change? Or is there something else driving the market that we should be concerned with? That'll be one of the topics on the big picture today. And you know what? Surprise, surprise. There are big changes coming as far as Obamacare. Announcement this week that United Healthcare, one of the biggies in health insurance, is pulling out because they're taking just too many losses in the health exchanges. That's a real blow to the whole idea of affordable health care. What is coming in terms of Obamacare, and are the American people ready for it? And notice that many of these changes aren't going to be felt until after the elections. And speaking of feeling things, remember that oil 2 months ago was at $26 a barrel, but now it's 40 plus. So is the bottom in? Have we seen the bottom bounce? And is it going to continue going back up? Was that as low as she goes? All of those things under conversation today for the big picture. And now first on the agenda for today's program, Ryan Poplava. And to start off the show, we would like to hear you comment about this week's market drivers and catalysts. And remember, Ryan, we ended last week talking about the start of the earnings season. Jim and I'll talk briefly about that during the big picture today. The big Doha meeting between OPEC and members of Russia, and it looks like the oil summit failed to reach an agreement to freeze production levels. And the real question is, have we hit the real hard bottom end of oil and bounced and now going back up again finally? How did all that play out in the market at the beginning of the week?
Well, John, yeah, I think you're right. You know, definitely a big Homer Simpson don't is right, because that summit was expected to be, you know, a bit of a catalyst there. And that didn't necessarily translate into a bad thing, though. Even the failure of the summit, you know, we thought that markets would roll over in oil, and they did initially, but they rallied. As I mentioned last week, there had been a built up of trading ahead of the meetings, a built up demand in oil shares. Crude oil had been rallying ahead of that. You know, there was a lot of suspicion that anything, if there was anything accomplished by it, then there was a suspicion that maybe the oil stocks and oil would trade off of that. There would be some selling, you know, buy the rumor, sell the news, as it goes in Wall Street. But, you know, when you think about it, Saudi Arabia is the only real player there with the ability to really ramp up production more so than, you know, when you talk about freezing production, most of those other guys, that's what they have to deal with for life. They're not really finding more oil. Saudi Arabia had the capacity. And then there's Iran, which is obviously working on getting back to their pre-sanction levels and would likely not agree to anything short of anything that would hinder that goal. So, you know, originally oil fell on the news, but rallied throughout the day on Monday because there was some news of a Kuwaiti oil worker strike. And as that progressed later on in the week, there was a lot of news that that would get resolved. So it didn't really drastically affect oil all that much this week. But, you know, when you get down to it, John, current supply and demand issues. We're not dealing with a 1970s oil embargo style crisis. It might be better essentially just to let market forces do their own thing, which seems to be working with, you know, just a drastic cut in U.S. shale production thus far. That's not to say, John, that, you know, the shorts probably didn't, you know, they got quite a bit of a nice jolt from that freeze news and a shakeup to positioning, definitely back in February, to kind of help that invisible handout, I'd say.
Well, you know, we are in the thick of earnings season now. We've passed the second week. The second and third week of this earnings season is really where the meat is, the good stuff. Most of the bellwether companies have already reported, with many more to come next week. And Ryan, you have said in the past that we have been in an earnings recession with a drop in earnings over the last couple of quarters. So how do things look so far on Wall Street? Have estimates been, what, lifted with some of the improvement in the dollar for multinationals and in oil?
I'd say yes. I think the market multiple itself has lifted, and I'm seeing research teams are upping their estimates up $1 to $3 at that very high end. And that gets you, you know, a price range if we're dealing with PE multiples of, you know, 17 and 18. You know, that gets us up there. And the most optimistic price targets I've heard recently on the S&P, that's not including you know, some of the ones that we've heard from Tom Lee and Piper Jaffray's analyst, Craig Johnson. But, you know, if we look at responses to financials over the last 2 weeks, I think you'd say they're not great results, but they are better than feared. They are surprises to the consensus. And so that right there is the catalyst that is lifting prices in the market right now for the financials. And, you know, many managers had underweighted that sector when interest rates were falling after that initial hike in December and from the Fed. And then there's all the recession fears that loomed in early Q1. But so far this week, I've been watching staples, some industrials, and some tech earnings this week. And there were a lot of weakness in some of those areas, and specifically in staples and utilities, which are defensive in nature. So there were a couple of days the market was down, Thursday and Friday morning. But, you know, a lot of that was driven in these kind of defensive areas. And that's not typically a harbinger of, you know, a correction right around the corner. Typically, when investors are leaving those defensive areas and getting into more cyclically oriented areas, more pro-growth areas, that's typically, you know, a positioning type move that's more bullish in sentiment and nature. So, you know, I've been watching Pepsi. Pepsi had decent numbers, but has recently struggled to hold on to its recent highs. It came down, I think, to its 50-day moving average and rallied on Friday. But, you know, some of the staples have taken it on the chin. Areas that maybe investors were, you know, less exposed to, like the financials, were getting the good responses there. So definitely a different picture this earnings season than what we had in the last one back in January when we were talking about earnings. But, you know, let's see, not everything's rosy. You know, there was a drop in Microsoft stock, Alphabet, formerly Google, and Visa on Friday due to earnings. Some of the economic numbers this week weren't that great either, John. And that's, I'd say, kind of putting it mildly on manufacturing, which has always been the concern for the past few quarters. But I guess maybe we can get into that later. But overall, you know, my Bloomberg results here show that about 130 companies have reported so far in the S&P 500. About 106 have beat on earnings consensus. And on the sales side of things, about 77 have beaten. So those are actually really good percentages. And we haven't heard from everybody, obviously. But so far, it's shaping up much better than the last quarter. And that's what I think is holding up the market a little bit here. Still feels like the market has been tiptoeing around the old highs, right? But when it did sell off, like I said, on Thursday and a little bit on Friday morning and then came back, it was mainly in these defensive areas like staples and utilities.
Well, Ryan, it sounds like the earnings front, things have improved. Now, is there something concomitant in the area of economics? I mean, because you said that some of the numbers you saw this week were disappointing, and yet that really just didn't seem to faze the market. So what's going on there?
Well, we didn't get a lot of really, really big numbers that move the market like typically the jobs market does that first week. But we did get some flash purchasing managers index data, and that wasn't that great, except for, I think, in Europe. New residential construction here in the U.S. was down 8.8% in March, but existing sales were up 5.1%. So a little conflicting information there in housing, but overall, things have been pretty steady. Jobless claims, that trend continues to slide down to 247,000. I think it was down something like 6,000 on last week, which this is a cyclical low for that reading. And, you know, when unemployment claims are dropping like they are right now, that's kind of a coincident indicator telling you currently job market's pretty strong, economy's pretty strong on that front, the consumer front. Here's where the news this week was concerning. The Chicago Fed National Activity Index dropped a second month in a row. And that's actually, if you look at the whole index over the last year, about the last 7 months, there's been a drag out of the last eight. You know, there was an uptick, I think, in January, but largely that hasn't been a very positive indicator. Philadelphia Fed survey came out this week. That's sort of our, when we talk about leading economic indicators, that's one of them that we follow very closely. Philadelphia Fed survey was negative, erasing all the gains made in March. And then there's the conference board's leading economic indicators, which we follow on a monthly basis. They were up for January, up 0.2%. And that's the first positive change since October of last year. So overall, jobs continue to be a strong point for the economy, and housing seems to still be on good footing. Interest rates are low, haven't moved up drastically, all because the Fed has been on pause. Manufacturing tried to kick things off in March, but, you know, giving a little bit back here in April. You know, it'd be a very concerning, I think, if we're watching manufacturing roll over here and not, again, kind of just, you know, continue to build, because we need some of those inventories built up. That helps GDP figures. But, you know, overall, I think investors have finally put the first quarter behind them and are largely, and analysts as well as investors, are looking forward to the second quarter, if not second half of the year. Obviously, we've had oil has dropped, the dollar has dropped, and oil has come back up. So, you know, the outlook, as I've mentioned many times in our podcast, those were the two catalysts that really brought us to that recession in earnings. And currently the expectation is that they are going to be what's bringing us out of it, at least for now.
Yeah, and given the steepness of the rally and little correction since, many investors who are out of the market are probably looking for any day dip to buy into. And it's what many in the industry call the pain trade. For obvious reasons. All right, Ryan Poplava, appreciate it. It was sort of an interesting week. Nothing dramatic, but it was interesting, and I appreciate it. We'll see you again next week.
Sounds good. Talk to you then.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com.
In case you didn't know it, the Financial Sense News Hour is more than just our weekend show. We also have a weekday program featuring key economic experts, which is only available to our premium members. Here's part of one of the interviews from this last week.
Jeff Christian joins us today. He's the managing partner at CPM Group, which is the definitive statistical analysis on gold, silver, and the platinum group metals. And Jeff, when we spoke to you last year in December of 2015, your expectation was for a moderate increase in the price of gold for this year, for 2016, you told our listeners. And you were looking at a record, I think you said unprecedented, short position that had been building in gold and the wider commodity complex as well. And you had cited that there was a chance we might see a boomerang effect where a lot of those record shorts flip to the long side, and that, you know, we could see some massive moves and more dramatic moves setting up for 2016 and going forward. So with that said, gold is up as much as 20% this year. The overall mining index was up, when we look at GDX, up almost 70% this year at one point. So really amazingly strong moves, both in the metals and in the wider mining indices. So your outlook was definitely correct. It was quite prescient when you spoke to us in December 2015. At this point, you know, did this major move that we saw, did it take you by surprise, or was this roughly what you expected heading into this year?
Well, to be honest, the upward move has been a little bit higher and a little bit longer than we had expected. You know, we're speaking on April 14th, and our expectation had been that the price would probably rally in the first quarter, but that by the time you got into the middle part of April, the price might have subsided back toward, you know, 1170, 1180. And as we're speaking, the price is around 1220, and it's gotten up as 1280. So I think it's been a little bit more bullish than we thought, a little bit higher and a little bit longer. And I think that that reflects one of the things that you mentioned earlier, the, you know, short covering, but it also reflects, I think, a greater amount of economic and political concern on the part of investors than we had anticipated just 4 months ago.
Well, the market was off to a rocky start at the beginning of the year. For the first two parts of the year, stocks went down. Just about every asset class was falling. Well, since the middle of February, things have turned in reverse. Commodities are up, bond yields are down, and stocks are rising. Is this rally have legs to it, or are we close to a top? Joining us on the program from Vermilion Research is Dave Nikoski. Dave, let's begin with the S&P 500. It seems like since the middle of February, it's just been a relentless climb upwards.
Yes. From the lows, it certainly has been a pretty monstrous advance in the market. And I think what's different, and I think the questions that I'm getting asked most often are, does this rally have more legs? And I think most technicians have been behind the eight ball in determining whether or not the market was going to move higher. And most of them continued to stress that, you know, the advanced decline line's not confirming, the index isn't going to break out to new highs. I think this is probably one of the times where the majority is wrong, and we're now into the pain trade, and that's where portfolio managers, you know, sat on the sidelines and didn't participate. Volume was low on the advance, but when you start to dig through the individual sectors, you know, we caught most of the consumer discretionary as it started to bottom in January. And what we've determined in the market and what we've been indicating for the last several months is that we're really having a series of rolling bottoms when it comes to sectors. Consumer discretionary came off the lows in January and started to advance. Energy was still rocketing south. And I think the concerns out there was that many banks would face default pressure from the energy companies. And what you've seen is a complete turn of events. And the financials got hit hard in January on some of those concerns, as well as some of the international concerns with the Italian banks and some of the European banks overall. Now you have oil sitting at $43, and I think you're wiping away some of those concerns about energy defaults, especially when you look at many of the financial companies. Financial companies and banks don't want to take over an energy company. If anything, they'll restructure the debt. You've seen that with Chesapeake. I think you're going to continue to see that. Most energy companies that have survived the onslaught of the decline in prices, I think everything points that, you know, we finally have participation in all sectors at this juncture, and I think that would be indicative of a bull market. The most common question I get right now is, are we going to have a pullback? Or the argument of, hey, I own the quality stuff and it's not advancing as much as the junk. I have never seen in my career the aspect of having the most leveraged companies always make a bottom first. You see it in high yield. That's a confirming indicator to indicate the risk on appetite for yield. Everything to me would suggest that we move higher.
So when you see a market like this, when you're seeing broad participation, just like at the beginning of the year, Dave, where we saw just about everything fall down, stocks were going down with the exception of bonds. Well, junk bonds were getting hit hard. We had emerging markets getting hit, commodities. And now we're seeing almost just the opposite. As you just mentioned, oil prices are over $40 a barrel. If you look at the precious metals market, silver is over $17 an ounce. Gold is over $1,200. Emerging markets are doing well. So when you see broad-based reaction like this in the market, does that give you more confidence that this is more of a bullish move when you're seeing more asset classes participate? And in addition to that, more of the sectors within the market.
Absolutely. And one of the driving forces of this is the decline in the dollar. To me, that's the number one factor here. And when you look back in history and look at other periods where the dollar was strong and when it pulled back, a perfect example was the 2008-2009 lows when you made a bottom in a reversal in November and then you made the bottom that occurred on March 9th in 2009. you know, one of the things that took place is the dollar began to get really weak into that November and then rallied from November to March. And the day of the top of the dollar was actually March 6th of 09. And as soon as it started to decline, that's when you reinflated the rest of the world. And again, the most speculative areas of the market will always go up faster. Why? Because most people are out of the speculative and have capitulated the speculative companies as well as debt, and that's the first thing that's going to rally. And what I hear from many clients is, hey, I own the quality stuff, and you know, it's not going up at the same rate. It's hard when you already own the quality to get an advance to the degree that the speculative stuff, which is underowned, can advance. You see the weighting in the Russell 2000, for instance. I think at its lows, you had a very small weighting of energy in there. So you have a monster rally because no one owns it. So no one can participate in it.
You know, what's really surprising about this dollar rally, we had the Fed talk about taper, which began in 2013. They began to pull back in 2014, and we saw this dollar strength that started in the summer. And at the end of the year, Dave, they raised interest rates a quarter of a point, and the consensus, at least at that time, with the dot plots, a quarter point every quarter. Since then, they've backed off from that, and we've seen the dollar fall, but we've also seen the ECB get very aggressive on negative interest rates and quantitative easing. We've seen it in Japan, and despite that, the dollar has fallen against these currencies. It's almost hard to explain. You would think just the opposite.
Well, I think that what you really see is the market is very myopic when it comes to looking at indexes, and I believe we had this conversation before in another interview. The U.S. dollar index that most people pay attention to has not changed since 1973. I don't know what index we would look at today that hasn't changed since 1973. Every index gets adjusted over time. That index has not been adjusted for the trade-weighted aspect. And when you get to countries where, for instance, Brazil, which whose currency has declined 80-plus percent in the last 5 years, you know, if you have a 1% decline in the U.S. dollar index and you start to distribute that to the emerging countries, you're going to have significant moves, and that's what you're seeing. Is there truly a index that we should be looking at? I don't think that there's one that's truly developed. There is some emerging market currency indexes, but they're not as well known as what you see in the U.S. dollar index that is widely paid attention to. I think that is the anomaly that you're seeing. And that's why when you look at the U.S. dollar index, you saw three significant declines over the last 5 months that have resulted in descending rallies and reactions. We've been indicating at Vermilion here that we would likely see a dollar decline. I think most people were on the other side of that. I see a big top there, and if we break through 93, you're really measuring it against the other industrialized countries around the world. You're not measuring it against the emerging markets, which have no weight whatsoever in the U.S. dollar index. I think that's the key factor, and I think that's something that you should at least understand how that index is made up.
What's interesting about that is we know that the dollar's rise since the summer 2014 when corporate profits peaked. A lot of the companies that make up the S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, a lot of these companies are international companies. So the rising dollar has hurt earnings. Now, if the dollar continues to decline, is it possible, Dave, that we could see a reversal in that? In other words, where analysts now have been downgrading company earnings, and of course, companies beat them, but we know that happens every quarter. But is it possible that things can reverse in the opposite direction? In other words, a falling dollar now begins to help corporate earnings and, along with that, corporate prices.
Oh, absolutely. And I think this first quarter is going to be a wash and pretty much dismissed when you look at many of the companies that have international exposure. You saw it in Intel as soon as they reported it. It dropped in the aftermarket, and the next day it was actually positive. I think everyone's looking forward to see that, hey, you're not going to have the currency issues weighing upon these companies that are the large caps out there. You certainly are seeing the small caps advance at a much faster rate than the large caps, which would be indicative of a very sound market. I think that's the case, Jim. And I think going forward, you know, if we do break through 93 on the U.S. dollar index, you should be able to infer from that that we're just going to be that much more competitive against the industrialized countries of the world.
So as you look at this market right now, is there any sector, you mentioned that the risk assets, especially those that were beaten up pretty hard at the beginning of the year, are the ones that have done the most. As you mentioned, most people have gotten out of those. So money comes back in, it drives it up, and maybe even short covering. And that's a question, Dave. How much of this rally has been triggered, especially off the February lows, by short covering?
I think it's been a significant amount to determine in terms of percentage. I don't have that number in front of me. What I do know is most fund managers, and the questions I'm getting is, are we going to have a pullback because they're behind the eight ball? And I think that's one of my concerns is if the S&P does break out to a new high, in my opinion, you could have a parabolic move in the market as investors try to play catch up. I don't think there was much participation off that February low. In what you see in the market and since February, and you actually saw this since January when many of the consumer discretionary bottom, if you look back in history at other times where the market is uncertain about what leadership is going to be, this often occurs after secular bear markets. I wouldn't call this a secular bear market when we're looking at the charts. What I would say is that the characteristics of coming off this low are much the same as you saw in 1974, as well as the March low in 2009. And what that is you had a series of rolling bottoms, and different sectors are making bottoms at different times. And it's confusing, I think, the portfolio managers out there, as well as the retail investor. It's, in essence, you have investors playing, jumping from lily pad to lily pad, and I'm inferring that lily pad is actually a sector. So you'll get a sector that moves up from 2 to 4 weeks, and then it'll dissipate some of its advance. And the market investors will look at the most oversold sector that hasn't participated, and it'll start to rally that. And that's what you have. I mean, most of the financials up until a week ago did not look healthy. And you see the monster rally that they've had in the last week, week and a half. I think that's significant, and that's what's going to drive the market, in my opinion. It could drive the market to new highs. Right now, we've had a lackluster performance in the healthcare sector. I think that is a sector that you're going to get a lot more attention to in the next several weeks, and that could certainly advance us to new highs where the market readjusts and you start to play a game of chase for anyone that hasn't participated.
So as you look at these different sectors, and I know you guys do a lot of sector work at Vermilion, is there something that really stands out right now? In other words, are there any bargains left for investors? I know energy prices have come up, but relative to the rest of the market, a lot of these energy companies are selling at incredible low PE ratios with high dividend yields.
Most of your energy stocks, we raise the energy sector to a market weight. You know, as technicians, we don't try to catch parabolic down moves very often, but, you know, our overweights, our market weights, we moved consumer discretionary up in early March. Energy, we moved that to a market weight back on April 11th. Financial, we're a market weight. I think right now we should see the next advance, in my opinion, coming out of the healthcare sector. But your defensive areas like utilities and staples, you know, we're prepared to downgrade them to market weights. We went overweight staples back in August of last year. In early January, we upgraded utilities to an overweight, and they significantly outperformed. I think that's what we're seeing, as we're seeing the risk-on trade is coming back.
So if the risk-on trade is coming back, let's talk about other markets around the world, especially emerging markets. The interesting thing about this, they've rallied, and we've had the IMF, the World Bank, and even the G20 talk about growth is slowing down, but these markets seem to be on fire. Is it the same thing? Money's coming back into the beaten-down sectors. Let's say the risk-on trade is what is reflecting this kind of a trade?
Absolutely. As of late last year, we were hearing from the strategists who predict often keep no records about how many interest rate hikes we're going to see this year. You know, I think Yellen raised interest rates and I thought it was the right thing to do. And I think, you know, the aspect of her last discussion has been, you know, inaction. In other words, what I think she's really pushing for is she's going to let the market adjust and raise rates when it's ready. And I think that's what you're seeing now. I think interest rates have reached a low. Long-term downtrend is intact, but on a near-term basis, we are reaching a low, and you're seeing investors move from bonds into equities. I think that the aspect of what she's doing is exactly what investors want to tell her. Don't do anything if you don't know. We'll adjust it ourselves.
So when you see all of this go on, there's always the risk sometimes when you see a market that's been going straight up as it has since February. You see where the market is now. It's almost at new record highs. Is there a risk here? I mean, if you were to put money to work, would you wait for a pullback, or are there places that are safe enough to have a good entry at this point?
Overall, I think you should be buying everything on pullbacks from this juncture. I think the global markets are reinflating. I think that's only going to help U.S. equities, but the ones that are going to advance the most are the emerging markets, only because they are so downtrodden, so extremely oversold, that they can significantly rally from here. And I would be looking more international than I would U.S. right now, but the U.S. market is going to be healthy only because we're reinflating the rest of the world.
So a key point of this, would it be that the dollar continues to head lower, Dave? In other words, if the dollar was to reverse course for whatever reason and start going back up again, as it did, let's say, from 2014, would that reverse what you're seeing in the stock market? In other words, will we go back on to the risk off trade?
Yes. If the dollar were to advance here and reverse the downtrend that it's in, yes, I think we would start to see a move from the risk on trade back to defensive posturing. The key level when everyone's staring at their screen looking at the U.S. dollar index, the key level is 93. If we broke 93, I think you could have a pretty significant move in the commodities overall, but I think it would help the rest of the market as, again, I think that would help to reinflate the rest of the world.
Yeah, just a quick comment on the commodities. The two commodity sectors that have done extremely well has been the energy sector and the precious metals. Some of the other sectors have rallied but haven't done as well. What's your take overall on commodities, not just the ones that have been strong, energy and precious metals?
I think what you're seeing is you're starting to see some bottoms being put into the grains. You know, when you look at something like the Bloomberg Grains Index, JGG, you're seeing a potential for a reversal there. Again, I think the market is posturing that the dollar is going to continue to weaken based upon their move into commodities. I don't think that's going to be a failed trade. I still think that the dollar will head lower. We could have a reflex rally, but I don't see much more strength in terms of Yellen going to raise rates until she sees inflation. And I don't think you'll see any significant inflation until we drop through 93, and that's what's going to help to reinflate our market.
So given this, you would wait for, let's say, on any pullback, but if there was to be a pullback, do you expect that to be a minor pullback? And if so, is there something that you would gravitate towards first? In other words, if you had to put money to work in terms of dollars, are there particular sectors that really stand out with very strong, not only fundamentals, but the technicals really look good?
Yeah, I think if we get a pullback, I think the places to be is you're going to look for areas of growth first. And I think the commodities do head higher. I keep hearing, you know, that we still have overcapacity. This is a false move. Many of your steel names look absolutely terrific. You know, the U.S. put some tariffs on many of the imported steels. I think that's only going to help the U.S. manufacturers of steel. I think the precious metals, if you get a pullback in them, you know, you're breaking 5-6 year downtrends. And you're still in the early stages of the advance in the gold stocks. I'd prefer, you know, the equities over the actual commodity itself. It's roughly a 3-to-1 ratio in terms of advances by equities versus the metal. I think that manufacturing, if we break through 93, you're going to see a much, much more significant rally in the manufacturers, which we actually upgraded as well over a month ago. I think there's so many different places to be, and determining what long-term relative strength leadership is at this juncture, I think it's too early to tell. We need to get some significant basis put into what I believe will be the leadership sector. We just don't have them on a sector basis yet. We have them more in individual stocks than we do sectors.
Well, listen, Dave, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow the great work you guys do at Vermilion, how could they do so, please?
Yeah, they can give us a call at 952-922-7500. Or they can also reach us by going to our website, vermilioncap.com. There's one L in Vermilion.
You're listening to the Financial Sense NewsHour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
If you're a approaching retirement age or concerned about making plans for those retired years and having adequate income, you're going to want to hear our Lifetime Income series every Monday and Tuesday here at financialsense.com. Right now, here's a preview of this week's Lifetime Income program.
Joining me as my special guest today is Kathy Ruby. She's Director of College Finance at College Coach. And Kathy, why don't we begin, as parents are looking at financial aid cost or the cost of college, there are a lot of financial aid packages that are out there, and sometimes that can be confusing. Why don't we start with the basics? What should they be looking for when they're looking at a financial aid package?
Okay, well, lots of things to be looking at. And I'm assuming at this point they've already applied for admission and they've got a financial aid award in front of them. So when they're looking at a financial aid award, of course, the first thing to understand is how much does the college cost? So most colleges will list their costs, their tuition and their fees and their room and board. Those are the direct costs that a family will be responsible for. But then some colleges will also list indirect costs on a financial aid award. So they'll include things like books and personal expenses and transportation. And those estimates can really vary from college to college. But it's important, I think, as you're looking at a financial aid award, to keep in your mind what are the costs to attend that particular school, and then what are the discretionary sort of personal costs that are going to be there no matter what college my child goes to. So that's the first step. And then to look at the different types of aid that are offered.
Well, for investors right now, things are looking pretty good. Doesn't matter where you're invested in, whether it's commodities, stocks, or bonds, emerging markets, just about everything has been going up in the last 6 weeks. One metal that is doing very well has been gold. It's the one shining metal out of all the commodity complex that is doing the best in leading the markets. Joining us on the program is Ned Schmidt. Ned, let's begin with gold. It kind of bottomed there right in that December period of time. But since then, we've had a nice run-up in gold, but it's sort of in a stall speed here, not doing much of anything. It looks like it's consolidating. What's your take on gold? Where do we go from here?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, when the dollar dies, commodities rise. And that's exactly what happened. The dollar peaked in January, and then been coming down strongly against some currencies. These currencies like gold, which are a reciprocal of the value of the dollar, explode. And investors had been coming in the market, and they continue to come in the market. For example, silver, which is we'll talk here in a second about, the silver ETFs, exchange-traded products, are nearing an all-time physical high. Demand for these things is extremely strong. And with the dollar going down, they're going up. And then you add a host of other geopolitical concerns, which we could spend 2 hours talking about. So it was a spring compressed, and the dollar's fall lit it. And not only the gold stocks, which I'll come back to in a second. But it was important what happened this week, and that's silver finally confirmed the move in gold. When it traded as high as almost 1780 on Wednesday, that took out all of the intraday highs back quite a while. And so that move confirmed what was going on with gold. But the big winner in that whole sector has been the gold stocks. I mean, these things have been up, the gold stock ETFs have been up 70 to 80%. Since the January lows. And so this whole sector has been revived, and we see that in the whole commodity sector. Now, obviously, I still like gold and silver. I think gold next year, in 2017, will be trading at over $1,900 again.
Ned, if you think it's going up to $1,900 or surpassing its previous high, what would be the driver? Would that imply that you would see a major fall in the dollar like we did, let's say, between 2009 and 2011?
Well, the dollar is going to go down. The dollar is headed down. Our election this year will drive it down. The other thing is it's under-owned. And what you're seeing in financial markets, and I've been writing about this since last summer, the whole market structure is changing. The hedge fund industry is in the biggest business bear market it's seen since 2008-2009. So you're seeing this restructuring of portfolios out of this NASDAQ 100 stuff. I mean, Apple's in a bear market. Google's off 6% this year. Facebook, barely up. The people that own these stocks are going to be selling them. And we're going to go in portfolios from no gold to some gold. That big portfolio shift helps a lot because the gold and silver market are really fairly liquid, illiquid markets. The other thing is that real interest rates in the United States are going to turn more negative. This talk about the Federal Reserve raising rates, my dog is a better forecaster of the Federal Reserve than Wall Street. The dog forecasts no increases. Wall Street said we have three by now. The dog is closer. There, Wall Street's off two. The dog is off one. But what's happening is inflation bottomed in the United States about 6 months ago. There have been four times that U.S. inflation touched on a year-to-year basis, essentially 1% in the last 20 years. Every time it has turned up from 1%, it's gone to 4%. Every time. So we have just turned up through 1%, and we are going to see U.S. inflation go to 4%. We've also seen that the Federal Reserve is the biggest bunch of wimps in the world. They're not going to raise rates next week. They're probably not going to raise them in June. If they don't raise them in June, then it's December, because this is not the election year for the Federal Reserve to be messing around during the election. So everything's set up. There's no reason why gold shouldn't go up. This is one of them times when you've got to come up with an argument why it should not go up, and there aren't any good ones.
Well, Ned, I know gold has a seasonality factor. It does very well in the fall and the early parts of the year, and a lot of that has to do with what they call the love trade, the Indian wedding season. Typically in the summer, you see gold get soft, and usually we get corrective periods during the summer. Do you see that happening this year, gold following a seasonal pattern?
Well, not very much. I mean, we're in the process of a correction now, which gold is needed, and that was all inspired by events on the unemployment number on Thursday morning. But I don't see gold being soft, and if gold performs decently this year, as I expect, in January of 2017, people are going to be moving into gold with their year-end adjustments. And so you add to that, like what we're seeing today when gold's off $18, $19, we have this trading mentality in the futures market, and it can send prices irrationally higher in short periods of time. So I think we'll see that kick in, because there's nothing else for them to trade, really, except commodities. And so everything you look at from here to the next year argues for gold and silver. Now, the stocks, as I said earlier, just exploded upward. But the price of gold being higher and going higher has not yet really impacted the revenues of the companies. And we probably won't see that till they report. There may be one or two that have surprise earnings reports for the June quarter. But in the September quarter, they're going to see the first true flow-through of additional revenues. They'll have worked off all their old contracts. The only thing holding us back on the companies is they have this massive hedge position, over 20 million ounces. And that they should not have done. But that's the only thing that could hold some of these stocks back. And they're not owned by very many people.
You know, it's rather interesting because when the gold bull market took off in the early part of the last decade, one of the issues that some of the major companies had, you know the company I'm talking about, especially Barrick, they had these huge hedge positions. Okay, so we've had this three and a half year downturn that we've seen in the price of gold. So you can't blame some of these companies for putting in hedges. What happens if gold continues to go up? Would another factor or force in the market be these companies unwinding their hedge positions?
Yes. Yes, it would. And what we don't know, really, is which of the candidates have too much. That's the hard thing to tell right now. We also have the same problem in silver. I don't track that net short position. but I watch it every week, and it's been going up fairly dramatically. But what we have seen is more intelligent hedging. When the price rises, you see their hedges go up. Back in the last cycle, when prices went down, they increased their hedge. That's the wrong time. It's too late then. And so what they ended up with is all those underwater hedges. And so at least they're trying to do a little better job this time. But again, as we've talked before, these companies are lean and mean now. So what we're going to see is a lot of flow through in later this year when we get earnings releases. A lot of those revenues are going to flow. First thing they're going to do is flow through to the bottom line, because companies don't have a chance to screw things up with bad investments.
Let's move on to another commodity, which is oil. We saw oil bottom along with gold in the early part of February when it got down to $26 a barrel. We've had some recent geopolitical events. We had a strike in the Middle East, which brought Kuwaiti oil production down. We also have a number of factors going on in terms of, we know that U.S. rig counts continue to fall, and I think the EIA is estimating that from last year's peak, production will be down by over 700,000 barrels. But we also have Iranian production going on, which there was nothing accomplished last week at Doha. So what's your take on oil here?
Well, the IEA, International Energy Agency, came out with their updated forecast recently. And what they're projecting is, and they focus on the more important variable, net surplus. And when we came into the second quarter, that net surplus on a world basis was 1.5 million barrels a day. The IEA is now forecasting by the end of September, that surplus will be down to 200,000 or 300,000 barrels a day. So we're in the process of wiping out about 1 million barrels a day of surplus oil. A large part of that is the collapse of the U.S. shale oil industry. But at the same time, we've got to remember, global demand for oil grows about 1 million barrels a year. So between now and September, we're essentially going to add 500,000 barrels a day to consumption.
What about all this oil that is held in storage and inventory?
Okay, the trend is good. In other words, let's take the U.S., for example. That's where the weak spot is. Our production is now down 2% from a year ago, 2 to 3% from a year ago. So that's in the right direction. Our crude oil inventories are up 10% from a year ago. That's still too high, but you got to remember, 3 months ago, it was up 25% from a year ago. So the oil inventories are headed in the right direction. Production is going down, and we're importing oil into the United States. Our commercial imports are up 7% from a year ago. So what we're doing is we're bringing in more expensive foreign crude, and we're reducing our production of bargain price domestic crude. So what I think that means is oil ought to sell about where it's at. Now, why do I say that? Because there are items that are going to cap it. Iraq and Iran are still coming on stream. Saudis could still pump out another, they claim, 1 million barrels a day. So there's a cap to the upside, but there's no reason why we should ever go back to $30 oil.
So are we likely to trade in a range somewhere between, let's say, the upper 30s, maybe to $50 because of the factors you're talking about? So if it got up to 50, we know what would happen. The drill count would go up, and shale companies would start producing more because we're more market-driven here. So is that sort of the cap that you see here for the next year or two?
I might use 40 to 48, but that would be a subtle, you know, meaningless difference. What I don't think we have to worry about is it plunging and increasing the financial stress in the industry and the loan losses at the bank. So we're not out of the water in terms of the total industry, but it takes the pressure off. Shale oil has the potential to bounce back in the short term because we have a lot of wells that were drilled but have not been completed and turned into production. So if we get into the high 40s, we're going to see some of that come in. But that would be a short-term impact because then you have to wait till the companies feel good enough to go back and start drilling again. That's another leap. It takes a fat bank account to do that.
So as you look at the commodity complex, and we've seen rallies across the board, most dramatically we've seen it in the price of precious metals and oil. If you were to put money to work here, Ned, where would you put it?
Well, I think on oils, you've got to stay with the larger companies. And this is not the time to go be looking at for something to bounce, because it's going to bounce and then roll over like a dead cat. On gold, clearly you need to own some gold and silver accounts. I mean, it's just diversification set. I mean, this day that you can put all your money in Facebook and Google is over. So you've got to have some. I wouldn't be picking individual gold stocks yet. I would use the diversified ETFs. And remember also, not only had a rally in the precious metals and oil, but U.S. December corn hit $4.09 this week. And so we're seeing an extremely strong rally in the agricultural stocks. They're up about 8% so far this year. And so this whole sector, and as long as the Federal Reserve is a bunch of wimps, this sector is going to continue to be benefit from the dollar. At the same time, this stuff about China collapsing, I don't know where Wall Street gets its information, but they're so wrong on China, it's unbelievable. I mean, their imports in March were up 11% in dollars and 18% in yuan. Is that, if they're looking at industrial production when China is becoming a service economy with people living in the city. And so you got to look at all three sectors, and this appears to be the year when weather is going to be the hurt production, not help production in the ag sector.
All right. So if you had to go in the metals, you would probably pick the bullion over the stocks right now. What about the energy sector?
I don't particularly follow any of the oil stocks. But like I said, you want to go with the large ones because they're the ones that are not at financial risk. And the smaller sector is still going to have financial strain that investors shouldn't mess with right now.
All right. Well, listen, Ned, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow the work, you have two newsletters. You cover the ag sector and you also cover precious metals. Tell our listeners about those sites, please.
All right. My gold work can be found at ValueViewGoldReport.com, and the ag work is at AgriFoodValueView.com.
Now, lest you think this is the end of the program, coming up next is the big picture with a series of different topics for discussion. Well, things are looking a little better for the market. Are they going to be rosier and rosier, or is this just what? I mean, remember, we started the year with everything looking rather glum, and now people are saying it looks a little less glum than it did before. You know, something that's going to really hit people are the changes coming up in Obamacare. Major companies in insurance saying that it is becoming unsustainable the way it is structured right now. They're taking big losses as a result of that. So what are the changes coming up as far as people and their taxes and what's happening and what will ultimately be coming down the road in terms of Obamacare? And finally, oil, the bottom is in. Just a couple of months ago, we were looking at $26 a barrel, and now we're over 40. So it looks like we're on the way back up. All of that coming up next on The Big Picture as the Financial Sense News Hour continues at financialsense.com.